everybody. How's it going?
I'm Richard.
I'm Angela.
And this week we'll talk with artist Sienna Morris about painting with numbers.
We will give you some tips for attending a nerd convention.
And we feel betrayed by a sci-fi author.
We definitely do. Oh. Welcome to Nerd Portland Radio. So last week, you may have heard us plugging Geeks and Giggles, which is an art show in Old Town full of art of the nerdy variety. Well, we went to that show, and this week we have an interview with Sienna Morris, the curator of that show, and an artist with a painting style she calls numberism.
Today I'm at Fleeting States Gallery in Old Town to talk to Sienna Morris.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Good. So you recently hosted the Geeks and Giggles show here at the gallery, and Angela and I were both here and super excited about the whole thing.
Yeah, it was awesome and overwhelming and geeky and glorious.
Overwhelming?
I'm never prepared for just how many geeks there are in Portland.
Uh-huh.
Even though I know that, and that's one of the reasons why I love being here so much, is the geeks, because it's like home. So I always expect it to be like any other First Thursday gallery show. And then it happens, and it's this epic thing of geeky awesomeness. And this one was really wonderful.
Yeah, there were a lot of different artists. There were tons of people coming through. You had games. You had live music. It was great.
We had the roll for prizes, and we ran out. I think we had two prizes left by the end of the day, so people were pretty lucky.
Wow.
One person rolled two 20s, so they got two prizes.
Yeah. And it was good, and it was all, the prizes were bits of art from each of the artists here.
Yes.
So that was, yeah.
There was one exception. My assistant Barbara got three little figurines. It was Batman, the Joker, and there was one other one, I forget what it was. Spider-Man. One of our artists, we had T.L. Steinbrunner was doing live sketches all night, which was hugely successful. Everyone loved those. I have two.
Dang. You didn't get one? Soon.
Oh,
he told me I'd have to send him a picture and he'd take care of it.
Okay, awesome. But he's the one, he ended up getting Joker, I think. No, he got Batman. Yeah, he got Batman.
Okay. So all these artists had their stuff kind of, they were taking over your gallery space for the most part, but your art was kind of hovering up above as this.
Well, I live here.
Yeah.
And I work here. And I have a lot of art. I've made 70 pieces of artwork, so storing my originals when I'm not having a show about numberism gets interesting. And then there's the big ones. So the big ones that are up on the wall, those ones are like 32 by 40 or bigger, and there's nowhere else to store them. So that's just where they live, always. And then there's the glow wall, and that's where they live.
Right, and that wall is super cool. It's got to be seen to be believed, I guess.
That wall is for me. I really love those. The glowing pieces, I mean, once they're up, you get used to them, and it's really sad when they sell. I mean, it's happy when they sell, but it's also really sad.
All right, so you said glowy, you've said numbers. How would you describe your artwork?
Well, I call it numberism.
Okay.
Which I took from pointillism, and then just, so it's like pointillism, but I draw with numbers instead of dots. And it started with just numbers, and then later on this, I started using equations as well. Mm-hmm. So they're generally speaking realistic images that are composed entirely with numbers and equations.
Okay.
And it's mathy and sciencey. So most of them are inspired from science. The idea is to basically tell a science story about the subject matter, so it's data that best represents what you're seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. And how did you decide to focus on that? I mean, how did you come up with that idea?
It sort of evolved over time. When I first started using numbers, it was my way of drawing a four-dimensional moment in time passing. And the numbers of the clock, 1 through 12, were the best way to do that. So it was completely composed of 1 through 12, and you saw it passing. I actually did that for 2 years, and I had been studying science on my own this whole time anyway. It took me 2 years to start using math and science in my work, which I think just proves that I'm a dummy, because it was sort of an obvious jump. People would even ask me, and when I was working at markets, at Saturday Market, do you have anything with Fibonacci or pi? And I didn't, and then eventually I'm like, oh. So the first one I did was Fibonacci snail, and that was for fun. I just thought it'd be cool to draw a golden spiral with the data of the golden a golden spiral. So it's Fibonacci sequence for the spiral, which isn't quite right in the snail, but whatever. it's actually
I understand.
I feel bad with this. It was my first one, and it's actually wrong. It's a logarithmic spiral, not a golden spiral. So, but this whole process is about learning. So the numberism is supposed to be an extension of how I learn. So I learn something and then I draw it, and then it becomes sort of a living part of my world as opposed to just abstract numbers, which have never actually been good with me. I'm not actually great with numbers.
That's what I was going to find out. I wanted to know if you were mathy growing up or...
No, I was the opposite of mathy growing up. I was arty.
Okay.
And a tomboy and things like that. So a lot of my work became kind of a persuasive argument. It's one of the reasons why I keep doing it. So other than it being a part of how I learn, it's to show others the beauty and function of math and science. And part of that is me sort of looking back into past Siena, because there are still past Siennas out there, which are people who could be really into math and science but don't have anyone who's showing them. So the thing is, I was a giant nerd in school. Surprise! I loved school. I asked for more work. I was that really annoying student who was done early. I'm like, hey, can I do something else, please? So it's weird that I didn't like math. I was one of the easiest people to convince to like math. And I'm arty, too. So, I mean, the correlation between art and math is a really easy one. And they just didn't show it to me. I never, ever had a good math teacher. Which I hope you're someone's good math teacher.
I try.
Because you love it.
I try my best.
So that's, I think, the core is if you have an educator who is passionate about something, they can basically show their students what they love about it. If you are approaching it as just a job where you're just trying to siphon people through, then you're missing out on your... Because your job isn't to teach them how to do formulas. That's not your job.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
Your job is to give them interest in it. To show them, hey, this is interesting, this is cool, you like it. Because no young person ever is going to want to keep doing something unless it makes them feel cool about themselves.
Right.
Especially like in high school, everything you're doing, if you're going to become an actor later on, it's because when you were in drama class, you felt cool.
Yeah, there's so many cool things to do in high school, and math is not necessarily one of them.
Yeah, and even the littlest part of just feeling like you're good at something.
Yeah.
It's just like how I started with art. I felt like I was good at it, so I kept doing it. Someone said, hey, that's cool, that's pretty.
The first time I ever saw your work was at Saturday Market.
Yes.
So how long have you been there?
I've been in Portland for 5 years now, I think coming up on 6, and I've been at the Saturday Market for 4, I believe.
Okay.
Before that, I was at the Skidmore Market.
Gotcha.
And then I moved over to the Portland Saturday Market. I'm very happy at the Portland Saturday Market. It's really wonderful.
Okay, so, yeah, I'm just a market tourist, but I really like it. So, for you, I guess, being there, what does a weekend feel like?
It's very busy. There's a lot of work that goes into it, setting everything up and tearing everything down. And I talk to, it feels like thousands of people every weekend. And it's Saturday and Sunday, by the way, which everybody knows. it's a really wonderful experience. So if it wasn't for the Portland Saturday Market, I don't think I'd be as successful as I am. It allows me to be a successful artist.
All right. Well, what would you say makes a good weekend good at the Saturday Market?
Well, there's a combination there. I mean, obviously sales is a good.
Sure, okay.
But the things that stick with me are how the work reaches people. So there's a couple things that are really cool. So the first thing that really blows me away is the people I've met there. So I've spoken to astronauts at the Portland Saturday Market.
Okay.
I have people from NASA who've shown up, people from CERN who show up. I mean, because you get people from all over the world coming to the Saturday Market. And it means cool that it's there. It's that they're there. It's cooler that they like my art. they see it, and when they can, they look at my art and they can read it, and they can understand what it is that I'm trying to say in a way that's so much better than I understand. And then the conversation that comes from that, and how much I learn just from being able to pick their brains for a while and talk to them, that's really wonderful. On the other side, people who don't care at all about math, who hate it. Who verbally they tell me, you know, I hate math, I'm not into it, but this is beautiful, and this is showing me that, hey, maybe there is something beautiful with math. This does actually happen. I'm not making this up.
I don't doubt it. As a math teacher, I know.
That's a huge win for me.
Yeah.
I think I've told this story before to someone else, but there was this, like, 13-year-old kid who came in with his family, and his parents dug math, and they dug the work. And he just couldn't care less. Like, whatever. I mean, the art's kind of pretty, but who cares about math? And he came back to my booth 3 weeks later with a Gödel Escher Bach.
Oh, wow.
Which is a wonderful book. Because he had picked up the snail because he thought that was cool. And he goes, you're right. He ran up to me and he's super excited with this great big smile. And he said, I just wanted to tell you, I got this book and you're right. The Fibonacci sequence is amazing. and that changed it for him.
Yeah.
And he was really into math. So that was really cool.
That's good. Okay. Well, just real quick, what do you think is what's the weirdest experience you've ever had at Saturday Market? Because I know it can, I just, as an outsider, like,
what's, crazy people?
I don't know. Just, what's the story you tell people about when they're like, no, it's really like this sometimes?
All right. So there was this one guy who was in my booth. It was a long time ago. And my husband does 3D printing and I do printing on canvas. And it's like, oh, so you know about printing. And he was in my booth for way too long. And he wanted me to make him a printer that would print with human blood.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he... and
That's unexpected. Okay.
So I just wanted to know why he wanted me to make him a printer that printed with human blood.
That's brave. I don't know that I would have asked why.
He never answered. Okay. So I kept talking to him. And thinking, off the top of my head, just pulling things in my butt about how you would make a 3D printer and thinking about, a blood printer and how you deal with, coagulation and things
right,
like this.
Right, yeah.
Just so I can get him to open up and tell me why he wanted this. But,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so there's that. I had some cool experiences with people I've met.
Well, absolutely. It sounds like it. If you've met astronauts and scientists and everything, now I'm trying to think about how to create a 3D blood printer now. Wow. Well, that's good. I was going to ask you about some of your favorite pieces, because they're all, every single one is unique in a lot of different ways. So, what is one of your favorites, or what are some of your favorites?
The cello I did in 2010 for a mathematician musician, and honestly, he basically chose the math for that. It was a custom piece, and he's like, I want these numbers, and we collaborated a bit on it. Normally, I'm already studying something that I'm just interested in, and then I gather the data that I think is most cool and interesting, and I draw a piece using that data basically as the math story, the science story about it. This one was different. He gave me the data. And I think that's part of the reason why I liked it, is because that was a really cool learning experience for me, where I'm limited by... information I seek out.
Yeah.
And so when I have someone presenting me with this cool data, then I can just learn stuff.
Okay, so that's one where you were given the data.
Mm-hmm.
Do you usually come up with, something you want to study and then, I could turn that into a piece? Or do you think about a piece and think, I need to study this?
It goes back and forth.
Okay.
So there are general topics and directions I'm going with studying science that I'm constantly working on. For instance, I am intending to finally do the brain piece, which I've been planning on doing for a few years. And so I have just a bunch of books on that I'm in between whatever else I'm doing, I'm studying those. And so that is for my own betterment, just to learn about the brain because I really want to. And then eventually I'll draw a piece as sort of a final.
Okay.
The other side is something I want to draw. Or a custom piece. And so I start with the idea or the image, and then I go data hunting and researching. And that involves anything from, I do start a lot of time with the internet.
Okay.
Cool. And I'll Wikipedia, and I'll read blogs and all these things. I'll watch documentaries. And then you go into research books, reference books, textbooks. I also tend to balance it out with some what I call pop science books, which give you sort of overview ideas.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
then
absolutely.
From that I get my data.
Very
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of scattered and all over the place. I get it from anywhere I can, including... So if I know anyone like you who has a background in the fields that I want to know more about, I will pick their brain, and I will just steal their time until they're done with me. So
that's an awesome way to do research. I mean, that's really well-rounded and gets you...
The idea is like sort of full immersion is what you call it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you... It sounds like that's a very singular focus on a piece...
If I'm doing it right, then yes. Okay. If I'm sometimes me being a busy person who runs a business, averting for it, and then I'm no longer doing it right. But if I'm doing it properly the way I'm supposed to do numberism, then the only thing I'm focusing on really is that data.
Okay.
And it's usually something that's new to me. So it's something I did not previously know anything about, and I'm just studying. So, okay, so I'll give you a brief overview of one of my pieces.
Okay.
So, and it's going to be the cello.
Okay.
Because that one's really pretty and I love it a lot.
Right.
I will say that it's a lot easier to understand what I do if you see it in person. So
yeah. Okay. But if you could explain one of them, the cello one.
The cello one I really love. I think it's basically arms that fly out into nothing playing the cello. And so you have the fleeting moment and math and science there.
Okay.
So it's drawn with data that helps explain the beautiful function of the cello, how it comes off sounding so beautiful. I love the cello, by the way. So so the wood is drawn with the speed of sound, moving parallel to the wood grain in the spruce, maple, and rosewood.
Okay.
If you have a different type of wood, that's going to have a different density, and it will change the way the cello resonates, and so that changes the way it sounds.
Okay, so these are specific to these pieces of wood.
Yeah, and where I place the numbers is important. It's never just randomly placed throughout. It's placed where it makes sense.
Okay.
So then the tuning pegs are drawn with the 12th root of 2, which is used to establish the Western tuning system, so that's equal temperament tuning. The bow is the Pythagorean comma, which is the difference between two enharmonically equivalent notes.
Okay.
And the strings are the coolest part. I actually had to graph it out, and I sounded like a crazy person while I was drawing it.
All right, let's hear it.
So it's the hertz frequencies of every single note on every string lined up to finger placement. So wherever you press your finger on the string, if you look underneath it, that hertz frequency is what you'd hear if you played it. So when I drew that, I had graphed out with percentages, basically, for the line, because it was at an angle as well. And my roommate came in and heard me whispering to myself, you know, the percentage and then the corresponding frequency. And then the arms are the numbers of the clock, 1 through 12, for the fleeting moment.
Okay. Do you have favorite data sets that you just can't wait to use again in another place?
Yes.
Yeah?
So first of all, like I said earlier, the Fibonacci sequence one I didn't use properly the first time.
Okay.
I used it again in universal proprioception. There's a galaxy in there that I call the Golden Galaxy, and it's drawn with Fibonacci sequence, an equation to perform the Fibonacci sequence, and the golden ratio. And it represents a proper Fibonacci's golden spiral right there. I plan on doing a, where'd it go? Nautilus.
Okay, Fibonacci sequence. Absolutely.
And there are pieces that I have lots of numbers set to the side that I want to draw something with that I haven't figured it out yet. Pi, for instance.
Right, sure.
The current plan is to draw Archimedes drawing in the sand.
Oh, yeah, that's good. The soldier walking up behind.
Yeah, maybe.
Sad moment.
Yeah, it is.
Sad math moment.
But that was a cool point in history.
Yeah.
And he gave us the first concepts of pi using fractions.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, he's just a cool dude, too. I'd love to just focus on him. I do want to do lots of scientists, too.
Uh-huh.
So you have to understand that all of this, like, I don't have a math background. I don't have a science background. I didn't go to school for it. And so if you're talking about anything, one thing that inspires me with my work, it's people who are way smarter than me and are way more clever than me. These great minds throughout history who have been giving us so much to work with. So I'd kind of like to do a whole series on them. I've done Einstein. I would like to draw Tesla soon, obviously. And Archimedes would be wonderful. And
So you also have, there's some numbers that are very visible and then some that you need a magnifying glass to see.
Yes, well, I use a magnifying glass to draw.
Yeah.
And some of them are incredibly detailed.
Okay.
Universal proprioception is the most detailed. It's so detailed that I can't actually print it the way that it was drawn.
Oh.
It was etched on a black scratch board.
Okay.
But I used optician's glasses.
Uh-huh.
There's a line that looks like just a straight little line that is made of the speed of light in metric in there. And I can barely see it.
Oh, wow.
And I drew it. So I'm not allowed to use that much magnification anymore. So for that, I ended up using Hubble images of the Orion Nebula and the Carina Nebula to bring it out, to make it brighter.
Wow.
So these pieces are better if you can get them larger.
Yeah.
So I work with them under a magnifying glass, and if you get them blown up in some of my larger sizes, the numbers become apparent. And they are. Every single mark is a number. There are no lines. And I tend not to overlap either. So when you blow them up, you'll see the numbers just pop out.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right, so if we want to check out your work, what are our options?
I'm at the Portland Saturday Market every Saturday and Sunday. I'm in space 918.
Ooh. All right.
And then I go to geeky conventions, obviously.
Yeah.
So I believe I'm at Geek Girl Con this year. I'm at Rose City Comic Con. But what's really exciting is the end of this month. I'm the featured artist for Evolution Expo 2014.
Really?
Yes. Which is exciting. I get the VIP treatment.
That is exciting. Okay.
So Evolution Expo is looking to popularize science via science fiction, which I think is really wonderful. So they pair real-life scientists. We've got people from CERN, Hubble, JPL, and they're paired with the actors who play them on TV and film. So we have like Amanda Tapping, we have Jason Momoa, you know, Stargate. We've got... So they're really cool, and I'm there. There's a focus on educating youth in science, uh-huh. and a strong focus on getting young ladies interested in math and science, which okay, I think good. Would be really wonderful. So I'm going to be there. My art is all over the place. My uh-huh. art is their logo.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's cool.
That's so exciting. That's great.
It's the second time my art was licensed, which is really exciting. The first wow. time was for a German physics book. Anyway, I will also be there in a booth, and everyone should come.
Okay. Thursday.
Real quick. That's June 27th through 29th.
Evolution. June 27th through 29th, the last weekend of this month.
Yes.
Okay. And just to make people jealous who weren't here for First Thursday, is the third annual Geeks and Giggles going to happen?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
We may end up, yeah, it's going to be bigger and better, and we may extend our space.
Yeah, I
we
think we might have to.
We have so many people here. We're actually discussing putting it somewhere else.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Yeah. All right. Well, gosh, thanks for coming in and talking to us.
Thanks for coming in here.
I guess I came to you and talked to you.
My gallery.
All right. Sienna can be found at Saturday Market, at her studio in Old Town, or online at fleetingstates.com.
And now it's time to review what the nerdy stuff we've done this week. Right, Richard? So what have you been up to?
Well, I finally finished that Dresden Files book from last week.
Yes.
I wore a sword to my school's graduation and knighted one of my students.
How? Why? Did that happen?
Things happen.
No, they don't, yeah. actually.
I have a special school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it a sharpened sword?
No, it was a replica, but everybody asked about it, so I had to wear it the whole time so kids wouldn't steal it, and I just walked around at the graduation reception with a sword.
So is he like a British war hero? Why did you have to knight him?
It just seemed like the thing to do.
Okay. All right, fair enough. And anything else?
I mean, I've been playing a lot of Watch Dogs lately, and that's but end of the school year, so mm-hmm. not a whole lot else.
Fair enough.
What about you?
Let's see. This week I went to a wedding, and I released a new album.
Oh, yeah? A new album?
Yeah. No big.
Oh, okay.
Check it out. It's called Damage Done. Yeah. But those aren't necessarily that nerdy.
Yeah, okay.
What have I been doing? I've been catching up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I have been uh-huh. reading the X-Men books you lent me.
Good.
Joss Whedon Astonishing X-Men.
Yeah, okay. That's a good set.
Also not modern. But what I've been doing mostly is been preparing for like a few straight months of going to conventions. Sci-fi conventions and fantasy conventions and comic conventions and pop culture. You know, you go right. to a lot of gaming conventions.
Yeah, exactly.
But since it is the season, maybe we could talk about some tips. How to go okay. to a convention.
I'm ready. We need
stay
to know these
calm,
things.
Stay calm. Stay collected. What comes to your mind?
Okay, so just, I've got to make sure you take care of the basics. You have to make sure you take breaks. You
yes.
have to remember to eat food. You have to stay hydrated.
Yeah.
You know, just basic essentials that you forget about when you're running around.
Yeah, it can be very overwhelming. Yeah, I think taking breaks is super important because there's everywhere. You can be everywhere at once.
Yeah.
But it's okay to take care of yourself.
Right.
You'll be much happier. and with food, yeah, just resign yourself to the fact that you're going to spend a lot of money on overpriced
yep.
food and water bottles.
There's
like
nothing cheap.
Yeah. You don't want to spend a lot of time wandering around to save 30 cents on a hot dog or something.
Right.
Just deal with it. And let's see. Don't bring like heavy things. Don't bring a bag full of like everything you could possibly, like you don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need it.
Yeah, I carried my laptop at PAX once.
It was foolish.
I'm just dumb.
It was foolish. Bring an external phone battery, though. Those are small.
Yeah.
I have recently gotten one that actually works, and it is the best thing ever, because it'll just keep my phone alive.
That's good. I just turned mine off halfway through the day.
Yeah.
It's out of batteries.
But then you can't take pictures of adorable children cosplaying.
That's true.
It's a big problem.
I need two phones.
And something that helps with self-care, I find, is, and I did this for the first time at Emerald City Comic-Con, which is just, before the convention, sit yourself down, spend like 30 minutes or an hour while you're watching Buffy or whatever, and like just find what you need and write it down on a list.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, I need to buy the new Saga book, and I want to go meet Clark Gregg or whatever.
Yeah.
So you have those things, so you don't need to be, like, flipping through the programming book and, like, wondering uh-huh. what there is.
Yeah.
So just make yourself that list.
And it's not like you need a spreadsheet of it or anything. No. You just need to know, like, the core things.
Yeah, and, like, write down the booth numbers. Like, I usually just take a screenshot of all the tweets I need.
Yeah.
So I just, like, all right, I remember that this booth is there.
Uh-huh.
And then make the list, and then don't do everything on it.
Yeah, don't do everything. There's too much to do. And and when you're there, it's like time will just get away with from you. And so you're doing this one thing, and just you don't have to rush to the next one. It'll be there next year. Someone's going to put it on YouTube. It's there. It's fine.
That's definitely true about panels. It's going to be on YouTube. Let's see. Oh, if you do need to go to the convention, like a lot of people hit the con and immediately go and run and look at every booth at the convention, uh-huh. and it's very crowded. So my insider tip for you as a person who has exhibited at many conventions.
Okay, I need
go
this.
In the afternoon, because everybody goes the first thing when they get there,
uh-huh.
and then by the afternoon, they're all really tired. But, like, as an exhibitor, the last hour of a con, you're just sitting there because it's open, and no one is coming by at all.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah, no, it's really miserable. But if you want to go, like, spend time and have a conversation, or even just walk through when it's not completely wall-to-wall people,
mm-hmm.
like, the last hour and a half of the convention, I think, is the best time to sort of stop through, see it all.
Not when there's 20 people behind you in line?
Not when there's 20 people behind you in line. Exactly. Exactly. Is that it? Have fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay. Calm. Go, like, if you have a hotel room, just chill. Like, take an hour in the afternoon. I get so overwhelmed.
Yeah, don't get overwhelmed. Be calm.
We've gotten to this point where instead of trying to go, we really take breaks and we're much happier now.
Okay, sounds good. It's good advice.
All right. We will be back with the calendar.
Now let's give you the nerd calendar for the week.
Yeah, here's some events. Next Saturday is the 4th annual Geek Olympathon, which is run by the Portland Geek Council, which is a super group of, like, all of the nerdy businesses and groups and everything. And the Olympathon is a scavenger hunt sort of thing. At each location, one of those businesses is there with a test of your geeky knowledge or skills of some kind.
Right, and it's $20 for a team of up to 5 players,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, isn't that much considering the prizes are ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
There's 4-day passes to PAX, an Emerald City Comic Con that are there.
That's insane, by the way.
I know. That's ridiculous. there's lots of comics from Oni Press. There's socks from Sock Dreams.
Yeah.
And it's all presented at the Award-a-thon after party.
I have been to that once, and it was there. We were people dressed like the whole Scooby-Doo gang.
Really?
It's very fun. It's like a mini convention that takes place all across the city. So if you get a team of 5 together, why not?
Yeah, dress up. Do it. Do it right.
So to find out more about that, go to the Portland Geek Council website at pgz3.org.
All right, next Thursday, there will be a reading for the newest installment in James S.A. Corey's Expanse series at Powell's at Cedar Hills Crossing.
Yes, this is very exciting. I actually picked up, I've read the first and a half, maybe, books in this series recently because I ran out of John Scalzi books to read, and a friend recommended these to me and called them space opera, which I think is derogatory. Okay. I don't know what
space
that means.
Space opera's
good. Okay, yeah, they're really good, and they're starting to get a little dark. Well, they were dark, but I'm only in the second book, so it could get really dark if there is a trend in books. Just everyone has, you know, keeps dying.
Yeah, just sadder and sadder and sadder.
Game of Thrones did that too. But they're really good. I learned today, however, James S.A. Corey is a pen name for 2 people.
What?
I've never felt more betrayed in my life.
Understand.
There's 2 people there named James, I don't know.
Is it like James S. and A. Corey?
No, so their middle names are James and Corey, and S.A. is like one of their daughter's initials.
Oh, okay.
Or something.
All right.
Anyway, but that'll be fun. Go to the... Uh-huh. Check it out at Powell's.
Yeah, next week. It's at Cedar Hills, which is where all of the sci-fi authors end up. So get out there. That's where our people are.
Yes, indeed. And don't be surprised if you see 2 people.
No, not at all. Right there. Reading together at the same time.
That is it. Words. For us on Nerd Portland Radio this week. Thank you so much for listening.
Have a great week.